You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Hello and welcome to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and friends, I don't know about you, but I'm tired. Like, not spent. I'm not done. I'm just tired because everything is so heavy right now. And we all see what's happening in our politics. We've been living in this daily shock and awe environment with ICE assassinations and healthcare gutted and an increasingly fragile economy, and chaos just feels like it's being normalized these days. And as an OBGYN doctor, I have watched as reproductive rights, which is the issue that drove so many voters to the polls in 2024, it's been pushed out of the headlines, but by whatever like fresh hell drops that day. And it's always something new. But here's what I need you to understand. This issue is not going away. In fact, it's getting worse. We're just not seeing it. While we're distracted by all these other important issues, and they are important, states are passing more abortion bans. Women are still being denied life-saving care. People are having to travel hundreds of miles to get basic health care. And the same politicians who gave us Dobbs are planning their strategy for the midterms in November, where they're hoping that you're going to forget what they've done. But we can't let that happen. Because here's the political reality. Reproductive freedom will again be a critical issue in this election cycle, like it was in 24, like it was in 22. But it'll only happen if we keep it at the forefront, if we keep telling the truth about what these bans actually do to real people. So today, I'm bringing you a guest with a story that you need to hear. In fact, you've probably already heard it before, because my guest, Amanda Zarowski, has generously and courageously shared her story hundreds of times in every imaginable space. I first saw her testifying at the Senate Judiciary Committee nearly 3 years ago, and I was dumbfounded. I mean, I'm a doctor who diagnoses complications in pregnancies, and I have these conversations with my patients in the exam room, but Amanda's story and the way she told it, that simmering passion that we could feel it, it just brought tears to my eyes, and it still does. I watched the clip earlier today, and I just, So we're gonna play it a little bit later in the show, and I'll post it in the show notes too, so you can see it for yourself. But in the meantime, Amanda, who is one of the most visible, powerful voices in the fight for reproductive freedom, also, by the way, one of Time Magazine's Women of the Year last year. She's kind of a big deal. She continues to carry the torch for so many of us. So friends, get ready because Amanda Zarowski is here with us. Amanda, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I am thrilled that you had time to talk with us today, because this is an issue that we need to keep talking about, and you have been an incredible, necessary, effective messenger. So before we get into what happened to you, tell us who Amanda Zarowski was before all of this, before your story, before the part of you that we all know.
Yeah. Oh, that's a fun question. What a good way to start. Thank you. I was pretty boring. I just lived a normal, quiet life. I live in Austin, Texas. I work from home. I'm married. At the time, we had two dogs. Now we have one. Normal, everyday person. The one thing that I think some people are surprised and then not surprised to learn is that I'm a former marathon runner. And so when we talk about, you know, how this is going to be a really long fight and it's going to take stamina and it's going to take grit, talk to any distance runner and they're like, yep, that checks out. She's got all of that because of the athletics and the sports that she did growing up. So other than that, though, I mean, just pretty, normal, quiet life here in Texas.
Speaking of stamina, I think it's important to mention that you are an Indiana Hoosier, so congratulations.
That's right. Hoosiers?
I mean, who would have ever thought the football Hoosiers? But as a Gopher and a Badger, I bow down to you this season.
Well, as you should, and we will take it because it has been decades since we've been good at anything, so I appreciate it.
Oh my gosh. All right, so walk us through what happened. You were 18 weeks pregnant with a wanted baby, Willow. Mm-hmm. Take us to that moment when things started to go wrong.
Yeah. So again, important to point out, this was a baby girl that we desperately wanted, my husband and I. And my first trimester and the first little bit of the second trimester had been completely normal, smooth sailing. I mean, I hardly even had any symptoms. But then I woke up one morning and something felt off. And this was my first pregnancy, so I didn't really know how to describe it other than that I felt wider than I was supposed to. Like, I felt like my body was physically wider. And as it turns out, that's because it was. So I had something called PPROM, which essentially means that I was dilating prematurely. So I was feeling myself dilate. I just couldn't articulate that because I didn't know. And so I contacted my doctor and I said, you know, something feels off. What should I do? And she said, come in right away. And immediately she diagnosed me and she said, you know, you've got this condition. She called it this horrible terminology, incompetent cervix, which is a gross term.
It's a terrible term.
Yeah, it's terrible. And she said, you know, unfortunately, there's nothing we can do to reverse course. And I said, what does that mean? And she said, you're going to lose the baby. And you can imagine in that moment, I mean, all of the air got sucked out of the room. I had tunnel vision. I mean, it was just complete shock and despair. And my husband, Josh, had to kind of pick up the pieces here and figure out what to do next. And he said, well, what do we do? What happens next? And she said, you know, normally I would be able to induce labor, but because of this law that just went into effect in Texas this same week, by the way, my hands are tied and I can't do anything because it would be considered an illegal abortion because Willow's heart was still beating. So I had to wait until either her heart stopped, which is not something you ever wish for, right? When you're pregnant with a baby you desperately want. Or I had to wait until I met the medical exception in Texas, which is life of the mother. So I was either waiting for essentially Willow to die or for myself to almost die. That was the only way I could get care. And so for me, what happened was the latter. I went into septic shock 3 days later and finally was sick enough to meet the criteria to deserve care in Texas. My doctor was able to stabilize me enough to deliver Willow, but then I crashed with another round of sepsis, landed in the ICU, nearly died, by the way, and spent about a week in the hospital. And as a result of everything that I went through that was completely preventable, by the way, my fertility and my reproductive organs are permanently compromised.
It's really important to highlight what you just said, that this was completely preventable. And that's the thing about your story and so many others, that just as an OBGYN doc, it really makes us so frustrated and angry because we can't help. We know what the evidence shows and we know what the data shows. And to have to look you in the eye and say, I know what the right thing to do is. I know how to save your life. I know how to give you the best chance at having a family in the future, but I can't do it because of politicians.
Yeah. I mean, my doctor, my whole healthcare team, and we saw, you know, a number of MFMs and got second opinions, and everyone's face, you could just tell they were just completely gut-wrenched at the situation. I mean, they were anguished. It was painful for them to be able to tell me that I couldn't get care. And when I was in the hospital, as a matter of fact, I learned this later. I remember like seeing a lot of people when I was in the ICU, but I was still pretty out of it. So I wasn't really putting it together. But what I learned later was that doctors, nurses, techs, all of these healthcare workers from all kinds of different units were coming to see me because they had heard of what happened. And they said, they kept saying to Josh, they were like, we knew that something like this was going to happen. We just can't believe it's happening here and it's happening already. Because the trigger ban in Texas went into effect 2 days after my water broke. And it was instant chaos, right? And they were just so upset. And they're like, we can't believe that this is happening, even though we knew it was going to.
And here we are all these years later, and it's still happening, and it's happening in more places, and it's happened to more and more women. But the difference with you, and I should stop and say, I am talking with Amanda Zarowski. She is a reproductive rights advocate and a bad ass. Can I say that on the radio, Abe? I did. And a bad ass woman. The difference was that it triggered something in you that has gone on to inspire others and really stoke the fire in the fight for reproductive rights. And we are definitely going to talk about that later in the show. But I'm thinking about like the care that you got when you were in the hospital, all of those people who were coming to visit you, you're focusing on getting better and surviving. What happened after that? As you're getting better and you're thinking about the repercussions and your body and your healing and your future fertility, how did you bring that all together mentally and psychologically?
Good question. I don't think I've ever really thought about that before, but now that I am, I was still so desperate to have a baby and I was so desperate to get pregnant again that all I could think about was, when can we start trying again? How soon until I can start trying again? It had not even crossed my mind that the trauma my body had been through would prevent me from ever being able to get pregnant again. I was just already thinking about, okay, when can we, you know, continue this process to expand our family? And so it took, you know, several weeks, actually several months of testing, follow-ups, failed tests for physicians to realize you can't get pregnant again. And that was devastating. And I think that's when it really turned from heartbreak to just rage, just absolute rage. Now, I will say I'm very grateful that modern medicine has, you know, IVF, and Josh and I will have to use a surrogate. And we are very grateful that those things exist. But to have the ability to carry my own child be taken away from me unnecessarily is a rage unlike any other.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. It's so unfair on all the levels.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the last minute we have before we have to go to break, just when did you realize that what you were going through wasn't just your trauma, but it was being experienced by people all over Texas and even beyond?
I was still in the hospital and Josh and I were talking about it. And we thought, you know, we are privileged individuals. And if this horrific thing can happen to us, it can happen to anyone. It is happening to others. And for others, it's going to be a lot worse. And we got to do something about it.
Yeah. Amanda Zarowski, you are an amazing woman. We are just getting into your story and where you are, where you have taken it since then. So we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, Amanda's going to tell us about the moment she decided to take her pain and turn it into power. I'm here with reproductive rights advocate Amanda Zarowski. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm here with my friend Amanda Zarowski. She's a reproductive rights advocate, Time Magazine, one of Time Magazine's Women of the Year from last year. And she's telling us her story, her horrific story of her wanted pregnancy and how it almost took her life because of Texas's abortion ban. And also how her story became our story. Amanda, not everybody who experiences trauma like this decides to go public and share and inspire others to fight back, but you did. That takes a different kind of courage. What made you decide to share your story?
You know, Josh and I were so fearful of what would happen to people who didn't have all of the same privileges and resources that we do. And so we knew it was important to start speaking out to essentially warn our fellow Texans, which eventually became fellow Americans as our story spread, because we know that a lot of people weren't tracking these bans and didn't understand these bans. And so we thought, you know, if we just tell them what happened to us in a very real, plain way, maybe we can wake some people up and prevent this from happening to others.
And this is how so many people like me were first introduced to you. When we saw you, when I saw you testify for the Senate Judiciary, and you were this powerhouse with such fire. Abe, do you have that clip pulled up? All right, play it for us.
About 8 months ago, I was thrilled to be cruising through the second trimester of my first pregnancy. I was carrying our daughter, Willow, who finally, blissfully been conceived after 18 months of grueling fertility treatment. My husband, Josh, and I were beyond thrilled. Then, on a sunny August day, after I had just finished the invite list for the baby shower my sister was planning for me, everything changed. Some unexpected symptoms arrived, and I contacted my obstetrician to be safe and was surprised when I was told to come in as soon as possible. After a brief examination, my husband and I received the harrowing news that I had dilated prematurely due to a condition known as cervical insufficiency. Soon after, my membranes ruptured, and we were told by multiple doctors that the loss of our daughter was inevitable. It was clear that this was not a question of if we would lose our baby, it was a question of when. I asked what could be done to ensure the respectful passing of our baby and to protect me now that my body was unprotected and vulnerable. I needed an abortion.
That line and the look on your face when you delivered it, just like, it still gives me chills. Hey, when, just some context, you're looking at your own senators here, and you are seeing them sit in front of you. Like Lindsey Graham, you'll see later in the clip, looks like he's sleeping. I mean, these guys are, and I say guys intentionally because they are, they clearly are disengaged. What did you want them to hear?
Well, first of all, I'll point out, I wasn't looking at my own senators because they couldn't be bothered to be in the room when I was testifying.
Wow. That's such a reflection of...
Isn't that right?
Of how our leaders just aren't really... Yeah. Demonstrating that they actually care about the people.
I had to go all the way to Washington, D.C. to get their attention, and still they got up and left the room after they had their 5 minutes to shine of Q&A, during which, by the way, they didn't ask me a single question.
Wow.
Their own constituent. Yeah.
Cowardice. Yeah.
Sorry, what was the question?
What did you want him to hear? You're telling your story, but I'm sure you wanted to drive a point home. You wanted them to leave that room feeling some sort of a way. What was that thing?
Well, I wanted them to know that their constituents, the people who hire them, right? The people who elect them to represent us are suffering. We're in pain. And now, since then, people are dying as a result of these policies that they support. And I wanted to let them know, first of all, this is not okay. Secondly, this is your fault. And third, every single day that you let these bans exist, this is happening and it's getting worse. And it is your job to do something about it. But they couldn't be bothered.
At any point, has anybody apologized to you or said, any of these leaders, has anybody even gone so far as to say, I'm sorry for your trouble? You know, like any sort of nothing.
No, nope. And it's interesting you say that because, well, maybe I'm jumping ahead, but we sued the state of Texas, and the state's attorneys, of all of the witnesses who testified, not one time did they say, I'm sorry for your loss.
Wow.
And no politician on the right who claims to be pro-life has apologized for what we went through or for the loss. It's just, it is complete. They just ignore us because as long as they don't engage with us, they can pretend like there's not a problem. They know what's going on and they know that they're supporting all of this suffering. But if they don't engage with us, by us, I mean fellow storytellers, they can pretend like this isn't happening.
Even if it's happening with people in their own lives, because you know that there are people in their lives mm-hmm. who have experienced traumatic situations like this.
Exactly.
Yet they can turn your back on them, on us. Oh, how do we elect these people, Amanda?
Well, I didn't.
How do we keep electing?
I didn't pick them.
But we can unpick them. We have an opportunity in the future. And you did kind of, tease a little bit of what's coming up in the next segment, because we are definitely going to talk about the documentary. We're going to talk about how you sued the state of Texas and the incredible work that you continue to do. And I just wanted to point out that you are selfless. When we had a state Supreme Court race here in Wisconsin, I texted you and said, do you think you could help out? And you spent days here in Wisconsin telling your story, supporting people that you didn't even know in the kindest, most generous way, because that's who you are. So I'm incredibly grateful to you. And I can't wait to talk a little bit more about the beautiful achievements that you've done for us. So we will be back after this break to talk about the lawsuit, the documentary, and why Amanda refuses to let politicians forget what they've done. I'm here with Amanda Zarowski, reproductive rights advocate, and you're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley here with reproductive rights advocate Amanda Zarowski, a Hoosier, whoop, one of Time Magazine's Women of the Year, and just an incredible, wonderful human being who is lucky to be alive and tells the story why. It's because she couldn't get an abortion in Texas. It wasn't legal. If you missed any part of this story so far, you got to go back and listen. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. And also find us on YouTube because you can actually see us. And we both put makeup on and did our hair for this. So, I mean, you know, cut us some slack. All right. All right, back to business. In our last segment, we heard your stunning testimony in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee. That was really just the beginning of your advocacy journey, because then you went on to sue the state of Texas. Tell me about Zarowski versus Texas.
Oh, where to begin? Well, I was a person previously who had never had an attorney for anything. I have never sued anyone. I certainly have not sued a state. I did not know you could sue a state. So this was not on my life's bingo card. But as we first started speaking out, people kept asking, you know, have you thought about taking legal action? And I kept saying, well, no, because we're not going to sue our doctor. It wasn't her fault. And people said, well, you don't have to sue your doctor. I said, well, who are we going to sue? And they said, well, you can sue the state. You can sue your attorney general. And I was like, you can do that? Turns out you sure can. And so I was connected to the wonderful team at Center for Reproductive Rights and was still a little unsure going into that first meeting with them about, you know, exactly what we might do. But after about 30 seconds of meeting with who became our lawyers, I was like,
30 whole seconds.
Oh, yeah. I was like, I will follow these people into the depths of Mordor. I mean, I love this team. And we just clicked and ended up suing the state. It was me and four other plaintiffs, so five total. When we first filed, I was the first, which is why it's my last name on the suit. But then by the end, we were up to 22 plaintiffs, and we were all women who'd been harmed by the ban in Texas.
And eventually, it ended up going to the Supreme Court in Texas.
Yep. So we had a hearing in July of 23, which we won. But unfortunately, and not surprisingly, the state immediately appealed it. And then through that appeal, it went up to the Texas Supreme Court. And so what a lot of people don't understand is it's over. Like, the Texas Supreme Court ruled against us unanimously, not surprising given their political makeup. But it can't go any farther than that. So it can't go to the United States Supreme Court. And what we were asking for, this is another thing, common misconception. People thought we were trying to like restore Roe or overturn the ban in Texas. And we weren't. All we were doing was asking them to clarify the language in the existing law. That's it. That's the bare minimum. We were asking for scraps, and the state still said no.
Hey, and that's what we've seen ever since.
Yep.
What kind of, you were there for the arguments. Mm-hmm. You were there with 21 other plaintiffs eventually. Mm-hmm. What kind of an emotional toll did it take to do this for somebody like you? You're not steeped in this. This is new for you, but you've got people around you who care.
It took an enormous toll, to be quite honest. So I was one of four plaintiffs who testified in that hearing in July. And I think the cross-examination by the state's attorneys was almost as emotionally difficult as almost dying from sepsis. I mean,
really,
the cruelty with which they questioned us was astounding. And we had prepared for it. We had prepared for them to be cold, to be distant, and yet they still surprised us. Now, that was balanced with the beauty of the relationships that I had formed with my fellow plaintiffs, with my attorneys. And so it was really this wild roller coaster where we feel such grief and trauma being relived over and over. But at the same time, after I testified, I'm enveloped by the most beautiful, loving, supportive community you could ever imagine. And so I definitely could not have gotten through the entire thing if I didn't have that community support. And even though, you know, it was so incredibly difficult, I would do it all over again, if for nothing else than that community and the women that I've met through it.
Hey, it is unbelievable to me that not only did you die as a result of this political malpractice, but then you had to argue in court that doctors needed clarity in order to provide standard medical care for people. I mean, this is just, it is surreal mm-hmm. that this is the world that we're living in, but it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's also a documentary that features your story, Zurowski v. Texas. We'll put that link in the show notes too.
Thank you.
And when I watched it, Amanda, I mean, I'm an OBGYN doctor. This is what I do. But there were probably three different times in the movie where I had to just like pause and it is so much. It's so deeply personal and important. How did you do this? Because it is there in your house. They are watching you make these decisions. Tell us about the making of the documentary.
Yeah. So the way that we came to the filmmakers was actually through the center, because they had worked together on another film called Jackson, which is about the last abortion clinic in Mississippi. And so they had reached out to the center, the filmmakers had reached out to the center, and they said, you know, we're looking for a story to tell about the effects of Dobbs. Let us know, you know, if you're working on anything. They said, actually, we've got this case in Texas that we think you might be interested in. So that's how it came to be. The center pitched it to us, the plaintiffs, and just said, you know, we trust them. We'd love for you to meet with them, see what you think. I had already put so much faith and trust in the center that I was like, well, if you think it's a good idea, it probably is. But very similarly to when I met my lawyers for the first time, when I met the filmmakers for the first time, it was instant chemistry. And I was like, I trust you. I value what you're trying to do. I think you're doing it with the right intentions. And so it was actually, as bizarre and surreal as it was actually quite easy to allow them to be in our home. And honestly, by the end, like you see some really difficult moments that they catch on camera, and those are happening live. I mean, that is as we're experiencing them. By that time, I was glad to have them there filming because they had become my friends and my family. And so it was literally a warm hug after getting, you know, some bad news. And so, again, an experience I never would have imagined, but a really beautiful one that I'm extraordinarily grateful for.
That highlights the beauty of this community. Mm-hmm. And can we just both give a shout out to the Center for Reproductive Rights and the incredible work that they do? Y'all
Absolutely.
Friends out there. Yes, if you are looking for a place to pitch in and support, this is an organization that is so necessary in this battle.
Yep, absolutely.
Amanda, switching gear. Oh, Amanda Zarowski, reproductive rights advocate. Time Magazine, one of the women of the year in 2025. I have to keep saying that because it is just, I have to keep bringing it back home. Like, this is who you are. I think of you as my friend Amanda, but like, you are Amanda Zarowski.
Oh my God, Sav, that's so embarrassing. I am not.
Yes, actually you are. The 2024 elections would have been so different without you there. You spoke at the DNC. You got to hobnob with all these famous people. You've done countless media appearances. Why was that important to you to be that visible?
Well, it wasn't on purpose. I normally, you know, even still now, like when I'm on work calls, I'm like, I turn my camera off. Like, I didn't want a life this public. But as our advocacy grew and as the situation in this country became more and more dire, it just kind of snowballed. And with every opportunity that came along, Josh and I, by the way, every opportunity that we've taken and every decision that we've made, we have been lockstep, and neither of us would have done something that the other one was uncomfortable with. But every opportunity for us to tell our story that came along, it was easy to say, yes, of course, we have to. Like, there are still people that don't know this is happening. And that's something I learned even to this day. Like, I'm sure there are people listening to this right now. This will be the first they've heard of these kinds of stories, right? And so
yes,
we have to keep talking about it. You have to keep leaning in. And so it wasn't a conscious choice. It wasn't something that I knew I was signing up for when I jumped in, but I wouldn't change a thing.
So let's name names, because you mentioned Ted Cruz earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got Greg Abbott, who signed the ban into law. Of course, Donald Trump. All of these people have been such staunch opposition to the life, to our lives. Yeah. I mean, to our ability to just live our lives and be healthy and make our own medical decisions. When you see them dodge questions and avoid having to deal with this issue, what do you want to say to them? Unfiltered Amanda, if you could say anything at all, what would you tell them?
Well, I don't think I should probably say the things that I actually want to say on your lovely radio show. but no, you know, I think really at the end of the day, it wouldn't be so much me wanting to tell them something. I want to hear from them. How can you look yourself in the eye? How can you sleep at night knowing that this is happening? And if it was your daughter, your wife, your sister who was in this situation, honestly, what would you do? I want to hear their rationale. I want to hear the mental gymnastics that they put themselves through to be able to live with themselves. Because I think that would also help us better have conversations to meet just your average everyday person who claims to be, you know, these far right pro-life people. And those are conversations that we need to be having.
Well, what does pro-life mean to them? Because it didn't seem like it was pro your life.
Definitely not. And not pro-life for the future lives that I hope to bring into this world.
Yes. The hypocrisy is astonishing. That's, I think, one of the things that bothers me the most. They say one thing and do another. And to be able to call them on it, to be able to have a real conversation where there's give and take and there's some acknowledgement, like, I understand your side. Like, that would be a dream.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
No, because it just doesn't even seem possible.
Doesn't exist. Yeah.
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 But luckily, you are part of a big network now. There are lots of other survivors who are speaking out. I think our voices are going to be even more important in the months to come. What does that community mean to you?
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, we always say it's a community that no one wants to join. We're all here unwillingly, but now that we're here, we love it. We feel very lucky to be a part of it. And it's funny because I'll be talking to my mom and I'll say, oh, you know, I met so-and-so, and she'll say, oh, gosh, the people you meet are just all so lovely. They're so wonderful. I'm like, that's because that's what this community is. We're a bunch of people looking out for other people. And, you know, we've all been through the unimaginable and we're all mad about it. And we know what it's like. We get one another in a way that, you know, some of my best friends don't because they haven't been through it. And it's beautiful. I couldn't do what I do without them.
I think it's also a reflection of who you are, for what it's worth.
It's very sweet.
When we come back, my guest, Amanda Zarowski, is going to share some advice for people who want to channel their own experiences into advocacy, especially in hostile states like Texas, Georgia, Wisconsin. You know who you are. I know people are listening all across the country. It's tough. We've got our own stories. So Amanda, we'll find out what she would say to them when we come back. This is Dr. Kristen Lierley. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm here with one of Time Magazine's Women of the Year from 2025, but it's 2026 now, so we're going to talk about the future with Amanda Zarowski. She is a reproductive rights advocate, and she's incredible. Amanda, I know people are listening right now in Texas, in Georgia, in Wisconsin, all across the country, where abortion is banned or restricted, and many of them have their own stories. What would you say to them?
First of all, I hear you. I'm here with you. I see you, and I'm sorry for what you may have gone through. A lot of times people ask me how we can get people to tell their stories, and I don't think that's the right question. I think it's a very personal decision that somebody has to come to on their own, and they should tell their story if and when they're ready. And then the question that we should be asking ourselves as part of this community is, when they do, how can we support them? I will say for anyone who might have a story, who's thinking about telling it, but they feel nervous, there is a community of us here, and we will welcome you, and you have a safe place. But again, that's a decision you have to come to on your own.
Yeah, and private message me, send us, like, post, comment, we will get you connected.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yes. So if somebody is in this situation and they're thinking about speaking out, what do they need to know? Do you start big? Do you contact media? Like, what can they expect?
I think it really depends on the person, right? Like, not everybody wants to file a lawsuit. Not everybody wants to go to Washington, D.C. and, you know, testify at the Capitol. So I think it's what feels right to you. And some of the most powerful advocacy is done around our own kitchen tables, and it's talking to our own family and friends and neighbors and members of our community. You are a known, trusted person in your community, and if you can have that conversation with your neighbor, it's going to mean so much more than if they hear it coming from some news article.
And what if you're not ready to tell your story publicly? Because there are a lot of us who live in pretty conservative, everybody doesn't get to live in Austin.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're living in an environment where you can't even really tell that story in your neighborhood, what can you do to release that pressure valve and know that you are doing something that's making a difference?
Well, look, elections matter. And as you said, it's 2026. We've got an election year. A lot of people bow out during the midterms. They don't pay as close of attention. But this midterm is probably one of the most critical ones we've seen in the modern times, right? And so I would encourage everyone to really pay attention up and down the ticket, right? Really pay attention to who you're voting for, what you believe in, and what these people stand for, and vote accordingly. It's going to make a huge impact this year.
And if you live in a place where things are locked up, you can help out other places, places that can flip from red to blue, places, state legislatures in places like Minnesota and Wisconsin can make a huge difference in the midterm. So there are places to get politically engaged as well.
Yep, absolutely.
What is it that keeps you going? Because this work is exhausting and it's re-traumatizing, and sometimes in the most unexpected, like you think you're good and then something happens and you're not good.
That's so accurate. You're so right. But what keeps me going is the community. And I know I've talked about it a lot, but it's an amazing support system. And, you know, every day that I'm fighting, I know that I'm reaching maybe just one person that day, but that's one person who we didn't reach yesterday, right? And as long as these bans exist and as long as people are still being harmed, I have to keep going, right?
Yeah, we all have to keep going. We have to lock arms and keep moving forward together.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Amanda, you are absolutely extraordinary. I just feel so incredibly lucky to be in your sphere and to have had the time that we have together. When we toured Wisconsin last year, it just meant so much to me that you would come up here and speak out and help to change people's lives. So thank you.
Well, I love Wisconsin and I love democracy. And so I'm glad to marry the two.
Even if you're a Hoosier?
Yeah, Midwest. Come on.
That's right. And you need it right now, because I should say we are taping like the day after. I see you're wearing a sweater. The day after it got really, really cold in Texas. Mm-hmm. Are you iced in? Are you stuck? Or are you using your Midwestern sensibilities to survive right now?
We are. All of those things. Yes. Yesterday I was getting a little stir crazy and I was like, I have to get out of the house. And so I just sat on my butt. We live on a hill. So I sat on my butt and just slid down the hill like a 5-year-old. And I was like, that's fine. My Indiana roots are coming out. We're good.
I don't need no sled. I got a butt.
Yeah, exactly. We're good.
Oh, Amanda, you, again, you're amazing. I don't know how you have found the fortitude to do this, but you've taken the worst experience of your life and you're using it selflessly to help people. You're forcing the country to face the reality of what abortion bans do. And I'm just really honored to be hosting you here tonight. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Friends, Amanda's story is not unique. This is happening to pregnant people all across the country because politicians are practicing medicine without a license. And the only way to stop them is to elect leaders who trust science and respect patients. And we have to keep telling stories like this until everybody understands what's at stake. So thanks for joining us tonight. If you missed any part of our conversation today, you can find it wherever you get your podcasts and check out the video version, please, on Dr. Kristen Lyerly YouTube. Many thanks to our excellent team, Abraham Lyerly, our producer, Nick Tierman, our advisor, who also composed our theme song, and graphic design by Nathaniel Gonzalez. On behalf of our whole team, I'm Dr. Kristen Lyerly, reminding you to take care of yourself and each other.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.